Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Amity.
And I'm Laura. Let's get started.
We're very excited. And also, I think I've said this several times about several books, a little intimidated to start today because we're covering a Shakespeare play, which was totally my idea. I kind of brought this on us. But Shakespeare, I think anybody can relate. It is a little intimidating, especially because the language is extremely old. It's written in script form. It's written for a play. So there's a lot that you just have to infer. And there's also a lot of Shakespeare enthusiasts who spend their life studying it. And we're just like
casually reading.
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm not excited. Okay. I'm scared.
Okay. Yes. So, fair enough.
Yeah. So last week I was working on this and I was telling my husband, like, okay, so I got a book, you know, how you said, like, we're on one side of the page, it's the Shakespeare. On the other side, it's like the translation, the modern translation. I'm like, sometimes I'm like, that's still not English. I don't know. Anyways, and so I said, well, I hope Amity's going to talk a lot because this is going to be the one where she just teaches me about Shakespeare or something. And he goes, isn't that what your podcast is about? Shakespeare.
Not true. Not true. Good grief.
Apparently I come across as the dumb one on the podcast. Oh
my gosh. No, you don't. That is not true at all. Well, to kind of start us off, there's a lot we could talk about, but we just a couple of brief, very brief things about Shakespeare, and we'll probably share some little tidbits during each episode of this one. But there's so much that is not known about Shakespeare, which is kind of ironic because he's so prolific. I mean, everybody knows his plays, not everybody. But people who do know his plays know them forward and backward and upside down. And they're so well respected and regarded and widely read and widely produced and all these things. But about Shakespeare himself, we don't know that much. But a couple of things that we do know is that, well, we don't 100% know what day Shakespeare was born. We do know that his baptism date was April 26th of 1564. And babies were typically baptized about 3 days after they were born. So a lot of people sort of just infer that he was born on April 23rd. That is not 100% true all the time because something could have happened between the time he was born and the time he was baptized, but that's generally accepted. He was born at Stratford-upon-Avon in England. And his parents were Mary Arden and John Shakespeare. And this is what I kind of love. It's just a testament to the time. Neither of his parents could read or write.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. And so his dad, John Shakespeare, was actually a mayor of the town, but he couldn't sign his name to things and he couldn't read. So he just signed his name with a mark because that's all he could do.
Does that not amaze you? Like, I had a great grandfather that couldn't read or write. And when I found their marriage certificate, he just drew an X. And what's amazing to me is like, okay, not knowing how to read and write is one thing, but yeah, couldn't you learn how to write your name?
Like, couldn't somebody take 5 minutes and show you
how to write your
seriously?
Name?
Seriously. Yeah. I don't know. It's wild. And especially, so that was your great-grandfather?
My great-grandfather.
Really? Wow. So we're talking like
18. Let's see. My grandpa was born in 1916. So
okay.
Probably like 1890. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it says like on the marriage certificate, it says his ex, and he drew an X.
Yeah.
But it's I mean, I get it, not knowing how to read or write, but like, you never learned how to write your name. That just seems like, but maybe writing, I don't know. Maybe that was too hard. I don't know. It's just crazy.
It really is. And maybe a big thing is they just didn't have any access to any writing utensils and paper, you know, if that's not something that's handy. I mean, some people learn, I think about Lopez Lomong there in a refugee camp in Africa, and he learned how to do math and read and write with a stick in the dirt. So it is possible. But
It's just crazy to me. I always
yeah,
thought that. Like, well, why
wow.
didn't somebody teach them how to write at least their name so they could sign it? Makes you wonder if they could recognize their name if they saw it, you know? I don't know.
Probably not.
That's
Which is
crazy.
also crazy. Yeah. It's the way I think about it is like if I could not read or write, I would feel like I was also blind and deaf, you know? And I hope that's not, that doesn't sound bad or something, but it's just, I don't know. I would just feel like so much of the world was completely closed off. By that same token, William himself, obviously he did become educated. And next time we'll talk a little more about his education. But something that I wanted to just share really, really quickly was a paragraph from this book. And this book is called William Shakespeare, Playwright and Poet by Pamela Hill Nettleton. It's in the Signature Live series, and it's totally written for children, but that's just my jam, whatever. Okay. So it says William Shakespeare was the greatest playwright in the world, and yet his background was not very different from the common folk who came to see his plays. Shakespeare wrote plays that are studied in colleges and universities, yet he only had a basic grammar school education. So there's a little insight into his education. Today's most famous movie stars and greatest actors find Shakespearean roles the most demanding and difficult to play. Yet Shakespeare wrote his plays for the people of London who jeered and laughed and cried during performances. There are many things that are not known about William Shakespeare's life and times. Because records of daily life were not kept in the manner they are today, no one will ever be able to be sure about many aspects of his life, why he made this decision or that one. His plays, however, show us that Shakespeare was a keen observer of the people around him and the various situations in which he found himself in life. And it just talks about how he based so many of his plays on his own observations and what he saw. And it's just incredible. And especially, I don't know, I've read lots of his plays. I've watched lots of his plays. I appreciate them. I love them. I study them. But like reading through this play this time, it just like hit me so hard, like how brilliant the man was.
I mean, just like the first time through, I'm like, oh my gosh, he's hilarious.
Yeah.
I've been watching the version that you recommended, and it's amazing. Like you said in there, that a lot of famous actors want to play in his stuff, and like, but it's demanding and hard. But the one, I think he said, what was the guy's name that produced it? Bra.
Kenneth Branagh.
Yes. So there's Emma Thompson,
Denzel
Michael.
Washington.
Denzel Washington, Michael Keaton, who is the Keanu Reeves, like so many of them. And so I was telling David, I was like, okay, we're going to watch this. And we've watched it over at least the first part over and over and over because I'm trying to understand what's going on, you know? And it's funny how you can have no idea kind of what they're saying or what's going on. And then one of them will say something like we were kind of falling asleep the other night. And we both just started laughing because like, every once in a while, something comes out that's like, okay, that
Yeah.
was funny. But it's just interesting. And so he was like, Keanu Reeves is in this? Okay, we'll watch it.
I know. Isn't it amazing? And like, yeah, there's so many of the productions of Shakespeare's plays, the cinematic productions that are just, they're star-studded because it's a big feather in your cap to do that. So.
The other funny thing, though, was Michael Keaton in it. Is basically the same character as he is in Beetlejuice.
Isn't Michael Keaton kind of like always
Same
the same
character. That's very funny.
That's funny.
So yes, I have a little bit of an idea of what's going on here, but we'll see.
Cool. Okay. Well, just in case we didn't say it, we are talking about Much Ado About Nothing. This play is a comedy. It is hilarious. It's so witty and clever, and it's very high paced. And there's so much going on all the time. And the other thing is that Shakespeare, he doesn't like, you might think, oh, he draws it way out because it's so there's what so verbose is what I want to say. But he really doesn't. He gets the plot going and it thickens like very quickly. So, how do we kind of want to start talking about it?
I don't know.
Well, maybe what we could do is just jump into Act One and start talking about the scene. And we can just kind of go back and forth. But as we talk about each character, we can introduce them as we go.
I don't know much, but I kind of know what's going on in the very beginning.
Cool. Okay.
So you've got Leonardo, who is just a wealthy man, and he's got these soldier friends that are coming back after a battle. So Don Pedro is one of them, and then Claudio, who has like earned some honors in the battle that he was in, and he's done really well. And
Yes.
so they're coming back together. Claudio has this uncle in town that's excited to have him come back. And then like you've got Beatrice, who is Leonardo's niece. She is asking about a different soldier that's coming back. So she's not interested in Don Pedro, but this different soldier, his name is Signor Benedick. As soon as she asks about him, then she just starts insulting him. And you're right when you said like it's very quick. Like the back and forth, especially between the two of them, it's very quick and very fast paced, and you have to like really know they're saying.
Yeah, and well, and that's why it's, I think it's really wonderful to watch a good version of it, but then it's important to go back and actually read the play so you can like slow down and read what they're really saying and so that you can understand it because they're so clever. There's so many layers to what they're saying that it takes a careful study to actually figure out what they're saying.
Oh, yes. And like I said earlier, the modern translation is still confusing sometimes. It's like that didn't clarify it at all for me, but okay. So I
Yeah.
love one of the insults that she says. She's like, she's talking about them being at war. How many hath he killed and eaten in these wars? But how many hath he killed? For indeed, I promise to eat all of his killing. She's just funny. Like it's just constant. And she seems. I don't know if I'm right, but she seems brilliant and he kind of just seems dumb. Am I wrong?
Well, he is also very, very brilliant. They are definitely each other's equals. She's just a lot more like just little fire hose. It's all coming out. But he kind of like warms up and gets to the point where they're very much back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And also, well, we'll see it. But
So one of
go
the
ahead.
podcasts I listened to talked about like there's a theory that, and what do you think? Do you think that they had a relationship before and it went bad and that's why they're like this?
Yes, actually, it does talk about that.
Okay.
That I believe they were engaged before,
Well, no wonder.
or just, yeah, in a relationship of some kind. And I want to say it was him that broke it off, but it alludes to it in the
Okay.
play, I believe.
Okay. So then you've just got them like, well, she's just insulting him. And then the messenger kind of starts to defend Benedict. And Leonardo's like, there's just a merry war between these two. Like, they're just going to take jabs at each other whenever they can. Let's see. And I loved this too, what Beatrice says. In our last conflict, four of his five wits went halting off. And now is the whole man governed with one.
She did not miss an opportunity to just slam him
Every
to the
time.
wall, especially if he's not there, but even when he is.
Yes.
But it's also very telling that she can't help but talk about him
Yes.
all the time. There's your big
So
clue.
that she wants to know who his like next alliance is because he's like constantly changing who he's obsessed with or whatever, who he's bringing around. And he says he change she says he changes it like his hats change with the style. Who's his friend that he's got this time? So his new friend is Claudio. When I was reading through this, I was like, how do we not talk about everything
I know.
that she says or they say?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I honestly wouldn't mind talking about everything that she says and that he says because it's so brilliant. So, I mean, I think it's important to sort of start with, not start with, but continue on with the storyline itself. A couple of things I did want to bring up is that this is in Messina and Leonato is the governor of Messina. And so this is in Italy. as many of Shakespeare's plays are set in Italy. So that's why all these soldiers are coming to him, because he's the governor. So he's sort of this important figure. Don Pedro is going to be coming in. He's a prince. He's a very important person, of course, higher ranking than a governor, but he gives due respect to the governor of this area. You were talking about how she said that he wears his face, but it's the fashion of his hat. It ever changes with the next block. And she's referring to the people he surrounds himself with, his friends. And now he has decided that he's good friends with Claudio. And so she's, and Claudio is somebody who has really, like you said, distinguished himself in the most recent battle. And so the messenger says that he's most in the company of the right noble Claudio right now. So Benedict and Claudio are thick as thieves right now. And Beatrice says, oh, Lord, he will hang upon him like a disease. He is sooner caught than the pestilence, and the taker runs presently mad. God help the noble Claudio. If he have caught the Benedict, it will cost him 1,000 pound ere be cured. And so, yeah, she's comparing Benedict to deadly disease.
A disease. I loved that. Gonna catch the Benedict.
Yeah.
Like in quotes. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious. And then he says, the Leonardo says, you will never run mad, niece, which basically saying you're never gonna catch the Benedict. And she says, no, not till a hot January.
Yeah. It's like snow in hell or a hot January. Yes.
My guess is she might catch it.
Okay, so in comes Don Pedro, Don John, Claudio, Benedict, and Baltasar. So, and just as far as who these people are, so Don Pedro, again, he is the Prince of Aragon. Don John is his bastard brother. Okay, so he's like sort of the unwanted stepchild type of thing. And he is also the villain of this whole thing. Claudio, we have been introduced to him. He was sort of the hero of these wars. Benedict, of course, is here now. And then there's Baltasar. Baltasar is just one of the attendants for Don Pedro. Don Pedro comes in, he greets Leonardo. He's like, oh, this must be your daughter. And he's referring to Hero. And so Hero is the daughter of Leonardo. Beatrice is the niece of Leonardo. I don't know if we said that before, but yeah. So Beatrice lives with Leonardo. He's sort of her guardian, but I love this exchange right here. So Don Pedro says to Leonardo, I think this is your daughter. Leonardo says, her mother hath many times told me so. And this is where Benedict pipes up. Were you in doubt, sir, that you asked her? Leonardo says, no, for then were you a child. And then Benedict a little bit later says, if Signor Leonardo be her father, she would not have his head on her shoulders for Almacena as like him as she is. And Beatrice says, I wonder that you will still be talking, Signor Benedict. Nobody marks you. And this is actually really funny because he had been talking to Leonardo and Don Pedro and even Hero a little bit, hadn't been talking to her at all. But all of a sudden, Beatrice suddenly is like, also, I'm here. This is her way of like sort of pushing herself into the conversation. And of course, she does it with a total slam on Benedict by saying, I don't know why you're still talking. Nobody's listening to you.
Right. But might have been.
Yes, I know. It was like, well, you are. You were listening, but okay.
Yeah, then he's like, what, my dear Lady Disdain? Are you yet living? Like, you're still here? Still alive.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah, and she says, is it possible for Disdain should die? Will she have such meat food to feed it as Signor Benedict? Like, there's plenty for me to disdain as long as you're around. So I'm going to keep living, you know?
Yeah, and then she's like, I mean, this is the English translation, but my pleasantness changes to disdain whenever you're around. If you're not here, I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm a nice person. And then you get around to her and I hate you.
We could seriously talk about everything the two of them say to each other. It's so funny.
Yes.
But we probably can't because.
Yeah. yeah. So they just have this back and forth. And then we find out that all of them, so Don Pedro, Don John, Claudio, Benedict, all of their attendants, they're going to be staying here in Messina for about a month at least. Okay, so they're guests at the house. This is where they're going to be. Everybody leaves except for Benedict and Claudio. And now we kind of finally hear from Claudio. I don't think we'd heard anything from him up until this point.
Claudio notices Hero and he kind of says to hit to Benedick, "Did you notice her? Thou note the daughter of Signor Leonardo?" And he says, "I noted her not, but I looked on her." So like, I saw her, but I didn't really notice her. And then basically Claudio just kind of says, "Well, is she not a modest young lady?" He's like, "Isn't she the prettiest?" And Benedict is like, "Do you want my honest opinion, or should I just tell you what you think I'm gonna, what I usually say?" Claudio says, "No, I want you to give me your sober judgment. Like, tell me what you really think." And he says, "Methinks she's too low for a high praise, too brown for a fair praise, and too little for a great praise. Only this commendation I can afford her, that were she other than she is, she were unhandsome. And being no other but as she is, I do not like her."
Yeah, it was just sort of a very roundabout way of saying, yes, she is pretty. And yes, I'm sure that she's nice, like she's very likable. But he says it in a very like, whew, puzzling way.
Well, it's like, okay, she's too low for a high praise. So she's not pretty enough for a really good praise, but she's too little for a great praise. You know what I mean? He's like, well, she's kind of in between, and
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't really like her. And then Claudio's like, "Thou thinkest I am in sport. I pray thee, tell me truly how thou likest her." He's basically saying, like, "You think I'm joking? No, tell me tell me what you think." And then I like this too. "Would you buy her that you inquire after her?" So he's like, "Do you want to know so you can buy her?" And Claudio says, "Can the world buy such a jewel?" Says, "Yeah, and a case to put it into." And then he says, "But speak you this with a sad brow?" I guess that means when they talk about being sad, that means serious. Like, you can't be serious. Benedict is saying that, like, that you're interested in her. I mean, I had to read this several times to understand it, but it's hilarious.
Yes. And Benedict is a little bit horrified because he's like, you wouldn't want to get married, right? And Claudio was like, well, I didn't think that I did, but I see Hero and I want her to be my wife. And Benedict is just like, I love this line. He's like, shall I never see a bachelor of 80 again? Is there never going to be an old man who's a bachelor? Everybody's just going to get married. Like, what is even happening? Because to him, it seems like marriage is putting a heavy yoke about one's neck seems like the worst thing in the world.
I have a question. So it says, "I
Okay.
can see," earlier he says, "I can see yet without spectacles, and I see no such matter." And Claudio had just said, like, she's the prettiest lady or the sweetest lady I've ever seen. And then he says, "There's her cousin, and she were not possessed with a fury, exceeds her as much in beauty as the 1st of May doth the last of December." Is he saying that, like, she's beautiful, like the cousin is prettier?
Because the and there is like, if she weren't so just like angry all the time, the difference between her and Hero would be like bursting spring to the dead of winter. Like, what is the difference in beauty? There's a lot. I think that is what he's saying, is that Beatrice is actually so much more beautiful than Hero is. I don't think he's actually slamming Beatrice.
Yeah, if she wasn't so mean, she would be more beautiful than
Yeah.
her cousin. Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that right.
So then Don Pedro comes back in. We start to get a little plot. Claudio tells Don Pedro that he's like super into Hero and he like wants her. And Don Pedro's like, hey, I can totally arrange it. I can talk to her dad. You're totally worthy of her. She's worthy of you. It's going to be great. But Benedict, of course, is kind of horrified by this. And Don Pedro and Claudio, they have a lot of fun with him too. They really like to poke and jab him. And they're like, Don Pedro says, thou wast ever an obstinate heretic in the despite of beauty. And Claudio says, and never could maintain his part but in the force of his will. So then here's Benedick. He says, that a woman conceived me, I thank her. That she brought me up, I likewise give her most humble thanks. But that I will have a recheat winded in my forehead or hang my bugle in an invisible baldric, all women shall pardon me. Because I will not do them the wrong to mistrust any, I will do myself the right to trust none. And then he swears that he will live a bachelor. So he's like, I'm grateful to women for the part they have played in my life. I will never marry one. And so Don Pedro's like, look, before I die, I'm going to see you look pale with love. And Benedict is like, nope, that's not going to happen. And again, just this witty back and forth. He's like, put me in a bottle like a cat and shoot at me. And I don't know. It's just like all these random weird things. It's like, okay, it's not coming to me right now. Is it the Taming of the Shrew? when they say, I fear the lady doth protest too much, the same can be applied here. I fear the man doth protest too much. Like he's so determined that he's not going to ever settle down and be married. He doesn't want anything to do with women. And it's like, dude, yes, you totally do. You're probably just terrified of them.
Yeah, I just learned in my psychology class that like whatever you think a lot about or like think that other people think a lot about, you're actually thinking about it. Does that make sense? So like if you're afraid that everybody, this is the example they gave. If you're afraid everybody's looking down your shirt or up your skirt or whatever, that's what something that you think about all the time. You think that's bad, and so then you have like a it's a defense mechanism, like making everybody else.
Oh, that is
Anyways, I didn't
really
explain that very well.
interesting.
Or what he's doing is he is going to the very opposite.
The very extreme.
Yes. So another idea is like a man who's cheating on his wife that becomes like a lobbyist or whatever, or like a public figure talking about how people should be faithful. But like he's cheating on his wife. So, anyways, just that just kind of
That would
reminded
be
me of
the
that.
other extreme. Yeah, that's interesting. Benedict leaves, and now we get this little plan between Don Pedro and Claudio, because Claudio expresses to Don Pedro what he feels for Hero. He's like, before the wars, I saw her. She looked pretty, but it didn't matter because I had more important things to think about. Like, we had to go fight and kill people. And he's like, now the wars are over, and now I see her. And I'm like, oh. He says, come thronging soft and delicate desires, all prompting me how fair young Hero is, saying, I liked her ere I went towards. I liked her before. I like her now. More now. And so Don Pedro is like, okay, here's what we're going to do. And this is one of those things that happens frequently in Shakespeare, and you kind of go, why this is so like unnecessary, but it totally happens. And the whole reason is because it does add like confusion and comedy and just these different levels of twists and turns. So the idea is there's going to be sort of like a masquerade party that night. So everybody's going to be wearing masks. And so Don Pedro is like, hey, I'm going to pretend to be you. I'm going to go woo Hero, and then, get her liking you because of me. And then I'll go to her father. And then by the end of the night, basically, she's going to be yours. And it's like, well, how come Claudio couldn't just do that? Well, because then the whole play wouldn't be as fun. That's really what it comes down to. So that's the plan. And then we jump to a conversation between Leonato, the governor of Messina, and the owner of this house, the father of Hero, and his brother Antonio. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that, or do you want me to talk
Sure.
about it?
So, they're having this conversation, and apparently a servant had overheard Claudio and Don Pedro talking about this plan, but he just heard the part about Don Pedro professing his love for Hero at the ball that night. And so he's telling them. And so Leonardo thinks, okay, so Don Pedro is in love with my daughter. And so Leonardo decides to tell his daughter, like he's going to keep it quiet. He doesn't want to tell other people, but he's going to tell her so that she'll be ready with an answer. But otherwise, nobody else is going to know about it.
And then we get sort of this dark side of the plot, because now we just have Don John and his friend Conrad. Okay. Really, this entire conversation is just talking about how John, he kind of hates his brother Don Pedro, because John, again, is a bastard son, and bastard sons don't usually end up with anything. They don't get a title, they don't get land, whatever. Sometimes, depending on the situation, maybe they'd end up with some land, but certainly no power. And so he's very jealous of Don Pedro. So Conrad says, you have of late stood out against your brother, and he hath taken you newly into his grace, where it is impossible you should take true root but by the fair weather that you make yourself. And Don John's like, I don't want to be in his good graces. I'd rather be a canker in the hedge. I'd rather sort of be causing problems for him. And he even says, I'm a plain dealing villain. It's just acknowledges the fact I'm the bad guy. Conrad says, can you make no use of your discontent? John says, I make all use of it, for I use it only. So this is sort of like putting the pot on the stove and turning the heat on. Something is going to begin simmering and then boiling. Okay, so here's the beginning of that. His other sort of henchman, Baracchio, comes in and he says, I can give you intelligence of an intended marriage. And John even says to him, he's like, okay, is this going to help me somehow? Is this going to help me build mischief? Yes. And so Baracchio says, well, okay, so it's Hero, the daughter and heir of Leonato, because tonight the prince, your brother, is going to woo Hero for himself and having obtained her, give her to Count Claudio. And Don John clearly does not like Claudio. He's like, that young startup hath all the glory of my overthrow. If I can cross him any way, I bless myself every way. And so we know that they're all going to work together. They're all going to try to take the situation and turn it to their benefit to try to bring down Claudio and possibly Don Pedro as well to just create mischief. So,
Yeah, I love what when he talks about how, and I listened to a podcast about this and I didn't get much out of it because I didn't understand what's going on. But one thing is that Don John is like the only one in this play that is like who he actually is. Like,
the whole time.
yes, he knows who he is, he says who he is. And you get that here. I cannot hide what I am. I must be sad when I have cause and smile at no man's jests. Eat when I have stomach and wait for no man's leisure. Sleep when I am drowsy and tend on no man's business. Laugh when I am merry and claw no man in his humor. Like, I wish I could be like that. Sleep when I'm tired, eat when I'm hungry, be mad when I'm mad. I liked it.
Not hide at all. Just be completely genuine all the time. There is some value in that. And so, yes, he's the villain, but he's also completely genuine. You never guess what the truth is.
And I love too,
Good
I was
point.
like, will you guys help me make trouble for these people? Like,
I know.
I mean, he's out there. So then we go into act two. We have Leonardo and his brother Antonio, Hero, his daughter, and Beatrice, his niece. And then there's two other women there, Margaret and Ursula. So they're all waiting for the masked ball to begin. Hero and Beatrice are discussing the perfect man. I can't, I don't know where it is, but it's really funny. It's somewhere between Don John, who never talks, and Benedick, who never stops talking. And so then they kind of talk about, is Beatrice ever going to marry? And she's like, no, I'm not. I think everybody kind of says, you're not going to marry. And she's like, yeah. She doesn't want a husband with a beard, but a man without a beard isn't a man.
I
So she's not going to find somebody like that.
No, he that hath no beard is less than a man, and he that is more than youth is not for me. And he that hath a beard is more than youth. And so, because of this, we are led to understand, and in every version, pretty much, you see that Benedict starts out with a beard.
Yeah, he does in the movie that I
Yeah,
watched.
in literally every production, he starts out with a beard. And so this is her way of sort of slamming that aspect of him, that characteristic. He's got a beard. What am I going to do with that? I hate it, you know? And then later on, he shaves it because he hears that she doesn't like his beard.
This
He's
gets around
hilarious.
to him. So, okay, so they have this conversation about the husband. And then Leonardo reminds Hero that they believe that Don Pedro is going to propose that night. And then at that point, the other party guests come and the men put on their masks. And I love this. The idea is that now the women can't tell who the men are, which is seems ridiculous.
It
Like
is ridiculous. I know. I've
they.
always been super curious about these masquerade balls because this is another thing that happens in Shakespeare and in lots of stories from old time is that a lot of things happen at masquerade balls. A lot of confusion happens and stuff. And it's like, I would be curious to actually experience that because how can you not really tell who somebody is?
No.
Like, unless it's a full on, like, over your entire head and shoulders, even that, I don't know. Get, I don't know.
Or tall or short or their voice. I mean, in the movie, they kind of just disguise their voices, but I know
Yeah.
that's interesting. Did
And
you
maybe
want
they did. Maybe they went all out in their disguises. I don't know.
It's just really funny. But the idea is now. They can't tell who's talking. Did you want to talk about anything in here where they, Balthazar and Ursula are talking, or should we just skip through all that?
No, I think that part is really, it's just kind of interesting. He just has all these different conversations going on. He's got Don Pedro and Hero. He's got Margaret and Balthazar. He's got Ursula and Antonio. Everybody's just sort of like trying to figure out who each other are. But really, the important ones are Don Pedro and Hero, and then Benedict and Beatrice, of course.
Yeah, so Don Pedro and Hero are dancing, and Balthazar is dancing with Hero's servant Margaret. Antonio is dancing with her other servant, which is kind of funny because he's like an old man. And then let's see, Beatrice and Benedict are dancing. They don't know it though, right? But they're dancing with each other.
Well,
Yes, they don't.
apparently I think that they do, but yes.
Supposedly they don't know, but yes,
Right.
and it's you kind of wonder if they did know. I wrote down, we're not sure if she knows it's him or not. But she insults him, and then she tells him to go ahead and let him know. Secret.
Well, he brings it up later, but she just like he's the prince's jester, he's very dull, none but libertines delight in him. The commendation is not in his wits, but his villainy. He both pleases men and angers them, and then they laugh at him and beat him. So basically, what she's trying to say is he thinks he's really funny. Everybody's actually just mocking him. Yeah,
And go
that's,
ahead and tell him
yeah,
I said that.
definitely a knock to like just another slam on his masculinity, especially because no man wants to think that he's being made fun of or mocked that way. I mean, nobody does, but she knows that that definitely would tear down his masculinity. So,
So then Don John sees that Don Pedro is dancing with Hero. He's now trying to make Claudio jealous by making him think that Don Pedro has now decided to go ahead and win Hero for himself. He's pretending like he thinks he's talking to Benedict. Like, this is so confusing to me. It's like all these people switching their identities and masks and everything. Anyways, so he's
yeah.
pretending like he thinks he's talking to Benedict, but knows it is Claudio. So he
Yes.
knows, but he's pretending like he's thinking he's talking to Benedict. And then he asks him to convince Don Pedro not to marry Hero because he doesn't approve. And this is Don John, right? He says,
Yes.
"How know you he loves her? I heard him swear his affection. So did I too, and he swore he would marry her tonight." So basically, I wrote in here that Claudio believes Don John,
Yeah.
that he saw Don Pedro, and now Don Pedro's going to try to take her for himself.
Yeah. Okay, so the others leave. Don John and Baracchio had left, and then Claudio is just like sort of processing everything. He's like, oh, the prince, this was his whole plot. He was gonna woo her for himself and pretend like it was for me. And again, it was like, why would he even do that? There's no, that would be dumb. But then Benedict comes in, and so Claudio sort of tells him everything that's going on. Benedict is like, did you think the prince would have treated you like this? And Claudio is just really upset, and Benedict says, yeah, because Claudio sort of like goes after Benedict a little bit, and Benedict's like, whoa, whoa, you strike like the blind man. 'Twas the boy that stole your meat, and you'll beat the post, which I think is kind of funny. So Claudio, he's just sort of like throwing a fit. He leaves. And this is when Benedict says to himself, Lady Beatrice knows me and doesn't know me. He's really upset about the things that she said about him. It got him. Don Pedro comes in, and Benedict sort of takes this opportunity to, in a roundabout way, get after Don Pedro. But Don Pedro is completely innocent, so he doesn't really get it. You know, he was certainly not going after Hero. He was doing exactly what he said he was going to do in wooing her for Claudio, which again, like, why does that even happen? Whatever, it's part of the story. Benedict, in a roundabout way, like I said, he sort of accuses him. He says, I'm just trying to think how to lead into this because Don Pedro is like, where's Claudio? And Benedict is like, well, basically, he's really upset because something bad happened. Somebody transgressed against him and should be whipped. And Benedict says the transgression was that of a schoolboy who, being overjoyed with finding a bird's nest, shows it his companion and he steals it. Don Pedro says, well, the one who stole it is the transgressor. And then he's like, yeah, you stole the bird's nest. Don Pedro's like, I will but teach them to sing and restore them to the owner. You know, he's like, I'm doing exactly what I said I was going to do. Then Don Pedro kind of changes the subject. He's like, Beatrice has a quarrel with you. And this is when Benedict tells him, yeah, she said all this stuff to me. She didn't know it was me. We were dancing. And she said all this stuff. She told me, not thinking I had been myself, that I was the prince's jester, that I was duller than a great thaw, huddling jest upon jest with such impossible conveyance upon me that I stood like a man at a mark with a whole army shooting at me. But then here we get the truth. He says, she speaks poniards and every word stabs. If her breath were as terrible as her terminations, there were no living near her. Like, that's pretty good. If somebody's breath was as good as their insults, everyone around them would die. And he says, I would not marry her, though she were endowed with all that Adam had left him before he transgressed. Which is really funny because he keeps saying that, and Beatrice keeps saying she would never marry Benedict. But nobody ever suggests that they should marry each other. They're the ones that keep bringing it up. Then Claudio, Beatrice, Hero, and Leonato come in.
So Benedict begs to be sent on an errand, like any errand, because he doesn't want to be around Beatrice. And I thought that was really funny. Will your grace command me any service to the world's end? I will go on the slightest errand now to the antipode that you can devise to send me on. I will fetch you a toothpicker now from the furthest inch of Asia, bring you the length of Prester John's foot. Fetch you a hair off the great champ's beard. Send me on any errand you can think of. I will do anything.
Yeah,
And
he wants to get out of there.
yes, and then Benedict is so funny. He's like, no, we just want your company. I don't have anything for you to do. Just stay here. So Claudio now comes back and he's acting upset. And Dom Pedro tells him, like, no, I have one hero for Claudio, and Leonardo has agreed that they can get married. They just need to pick a date. And Claudio is so excited. He's like speechless. He can't even talk. But he and Hero go off and they're dancing and they're kind of discussing their like commitment to each other off on their own. And then Beatrice mentions again that she's never going to get married. Claudio wants to get married tomorrow. And Leonardo's like, no, let's give it a week. That's plenty of time. So then Beatrice, they go back into this discussion that she's never going to marry, which has happened like three times already. We just started. But Don Pedro then offers himself to Beatrice. And she's like, no, you're too. She kind of compares him to fancy clothes and says that he's too lavish for her to wear every day. Like, I don't know. Do you have that highlighted at all? It's under here somewhere.
Yes, right under where he says, will you have me, lady?
Yes, no, my lord, unless I might have another for working days. Your grace is too costly to wear every day. That's not going anywhere because she's not going to get married. And then that's when Claudio says that he wants the wedding to happen the very next day, but Leonardo wants it to happen in a week. And then Don Pedro then comes up with a plan to get Beatrice and Benedict to stop arguing. He's like, I can keep us busy for the next week. I have an idea. Let's come up with this plan to get them to stop arguing and fall in love. But he's like, I'm going to need all of your help. It's going to be a challenge. It's pretty
Yes. And it's so funny because we already see, like, there's already been like a huge misunderstanding and then it was resolved. But then we've got other like subplots going on that are going to create lots of twists and turns and misunderstandings and sort of deviousness and all these things. But it all comes to nothing. And so it's almost like in the very first act and a half, Shakespeare already tells us why the title of this play. And I don't know that he titled it before he wrote it or anything, but you know, Claudio got all in a tizzy, whatever, because he thought that Don Pedro was going after Hero. And then within like two sentences, it's all figured out. And it was like, no, that was just a misunderstanding, you know, much ado about nothing. And that sort of carries on throughout the entire play. So it's really funny. It's really clever. But there's one thing that I wanted to bring up really quickly. And that's where Don Pedro and Leonato are kind of just talking about Beatrice. Of course, she's right there. Oh, no. It's right after she leaves. So Don Pedro and Leonato are talking about her. And Don Pedro is like, she would be an excellent wife for Benedict. And Leonato says, Oh, Lord, my Lord, if they were but a week married, they would talk themselves mad. And they would just go back and forth and back and forth until they just went crazy. But at the same time, they're like a brilliant match. So, and everybody knows it, everybody can see it. And that's why Don Pedro's like, guys, we got to get these guys together. And I need everybody's help. So,
Very funny.
plans start hatching.
Okay,
It'll
so
be
we'll do the
lovely.
rest of two and three next week. Okay, so I want to talk about what I'm reading because I thought it was very funny. So last week, Monday, I told you I worked on this all day Monday, which I was surprised that it took me all day. It was like, this should not have taken that long, but it did. Anyway, so then that night I was working at my office and I started a book. And there were two dogs in the book named Claude and Hero.
That's right.
And I was like, prior to today, I would never have known that that was like a reference to Shakespeare. I just thought that was really funny. Like the fruits of my labors that day, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that's the book I read this week was called The Turn of the Key by Ruth Ware. Have you ever read anything by Ruth Ware before? It was really good. I'd heard about this book a lot. I've heard about it several times, and I must have just put it on my holds list, and I really enjoyed it. It was about this young woman who gets this like amazing job as a nanny in this really nice big house. Amazing as in like they don't pay nannies this much money, and she doesn't really know why it's such a good pay. But anyways, so she goes. There's a lot of weird stuff happening there. Like she can hear walking above her room, and the family has everything on auto. So like the lights and there's cameras in every room and it's crazy stuff. And so the very beginning of the book, she's in prison and she's writing a letter to an attorney to try to get him to represent her because she's been accused of killing one of the kids. And she says she didn't do it. And so it was really,
Wow,
really liked it.
intriguing.
I really liked it.
Okay.
It's very good. And
Yeah.
there's like a whole like reveal at the end that was excellent.
So you finished the whole book though.
I
Okay.
read a book this week.
Woo! That's awesome.
I know.
And that sounds really, yeah, that sounds like one that would grip you and keep you.
It immediately. So like if you need a book that you don't really need to pay attention to. I mean, you have to pay attention, but like it gets you, so you want to pay attention. So
Yes, that is what I need, but also don't need at the same time because I don't have
you don't have any time. I know, and that's what I had to do is like just say I'm listening. I don't know. I did work one day, which helped a little bit, but I'm like, okay, I gotta listen. I was in such a routine with when I would listen to books, and now I've had that taken away, and
Yeah.
so I have to figure out
Figure it
where.
out again.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I did it. I started it Monday and I finished it today. So
Awesome.
very good.
Well done, you. That's cool.
I loved it. Yeah.
Well, I haven't finished it. I began it. So, and this is actually a physical book. Yes. So it's by Gil Paul, who I have not read before, but it's historical. It's kind of interesting. It takes very like intriguing stories. And well, they're all intriguing stories, but it's just not something you necessarily expect. So it focuses, it's called The Affair by Gil Paul, and it focuses on the love affair emerging between Hollywood's biggest stars, Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, in Rome in 1961 during the filming of Cleopatra. Says tensions are high, the money is running out, and a media storm is brewing over the Taylor-Burton relationship. And then he takes another character and makes them the star of the book, but it's centered around this historical event, as many historical books are. But anyway, it's good so far. Kind of interesting. Not something that I knew. I mean, I knew that there was like this love affair between Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, but I didn't know much about it. It's one of those things you're like, whatever, it's Hollywood. But to take that and make it interesting, that's
So,
intriguing.
where did you hear about it? Yeah.
Literally was just at the library and just looking for books, and I saw this whole section with Gil Paul, and so I actually got a couple of the books.
My next question is, when do you read physical books?
So that's the thing. I'm having a hard time with that. What I'm just trying to do is like when I'm home for a few hours with the kids, like we do things together, but then I take a few minutes. Like I'm just like, hey, everybody just read. And that's how I can read too.
That's like my dream because I really like reading a physical book. Like having the book in your hand, looking at the words, it's just not feasible for my lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I'm
That
jealous.
doesn't feel that. The hard thing for me anymore though is that I don't really even have time to listen to a
I
book
know.
because I don't really even have time to clean.
My niece the other day, I was complaining to her about not being able to read, like listen to books. And she's like, well, when you're cleaning. And I was like, yeah, I don't do that.
it's like cleaning is in spurts. It's in like 10-minute spurts. And so that would make me crazy to just be like, listen for 10 minutes and then turn it off. I wouldn't be able to do that. Then I'd just get distracted and be like, okay, I guess I'm just cleaning for the next 2 hours because I want to listen to this book, which would not be a bad thing, but then I just don't have time for that. So.
Well, we have this upstairs room, like a kind of a family room that my dad just finished plastering this week. And so we've been painting it. And so that's helped. I was able to stick an earbud in while I was painting, but the room is massive. So we're gonna be painting for ever. Like, ugh. Anyways, it's a big room because it's a big family room. And then we've got the staircase. And so we've got like a ladder, and we have to move it constantly, and so we can reach the high parts. And I told my husband, I said, this would have been a good room to pay somebody to paint.
Yeah.
But
Oh man, I hate painting so much. It's like very satisfying, but also good grief.
I hate it.
Such a pain in
And then we decided to include Presley because I was like, we can't
Oh.
just ignore her. So, like, let's have her help us. And it worked for a little while, but then she was getting bored and she was just being destructive. And like every time we'd put down a tool, she'd take it, or she anything I was using, that's what she wanted to be using.
Yeah.
Then she's painting walls we'd already painted. We're like, so
Yeah.
then we're like, we'll paint when she's sleeping. And Dave's like, we're never awake when she's sleeping. It's true.
Way too exhausted at that point. Holy moly.
I know. We'll have to like send her to a friend's house or something when we paint. I don't know.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea,
We're gonna be
honestly.
doing it for a couple of weeks. We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss Much Ado About Nothing, the rest of Act Two and Act Three. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.